All right. Thank you for being with us. We had to restart. We had some technical difficulties. Welcome to Pub Key. It's Thursday. It's an all-time high. It's a little rainy outside, but nothing's perfect. We have great guests with us tonight. Pete Rizzo is here at Pub Key. Like 6:30 tonight, we're going to be doing the Bitcoin trivia. This is Rizzo's series at Pub Key, which is diving into the archives, talking about the historical events over the years in Bitcoin, expressed through games. We got prizes. Expressed through games. It's like a Jeopardy. I don't know. Through games. History through games.
It's like interpretive dance.
There we go. And then we have the spaces now, the little table setter, the little palate cleanser. We have Tour de Meester in town. Thanks for being here.
Hello.
To see you.
Good to be here.
Jameson Lopp, I believe, is on his way. He's stuck somewhere.
When we hit 100K, he's going to come rolling through.
Okay. He has to make a grand entrance.
And Kool-Aid guy.
And Patrick Merck also here. Welcome, welcome.
Maybe he ossified somehow.
First time to Pub Key?
First time to Pub Key. It's
awesome.
Been amazing.
Excellent, excellent. Let's keep that going. So I guess the three of you plus Jameson are going to be doing the... You'll have like a quick talk, I guess.
Yeah, so we basically will have an interview. We'll talk about, you know, I think the theme of this one is really like, you know, since we're cresting on all-time highs here, to go back to like the first halving era, kind of talk about what Bitcoin was like before there was a halving and before there was a real big all-time high. So, you know, for the new folks who are just coming to Pub Key and they're just trying to ape relentlessly into Bitcoin,
yeah,
you know, hoping for that pullback. And they can hear great stories about how these guys were playing with Bitcoins when they were worth a couple dollars, and they'll feel really great. They'll think that's great. I wish I was there.
Yeah. Any such cases.
So yeah, we'll
I'm struggling to feel like great about all those Bitcoin I gave away, but
yeah.
What's the dumbest? Make other people feel good.
What's like the most painful one? I mean, you guys have been around for a long time. What was the most painful like giveaway or purchase or anything?
That's an easy one.
Go ahead.
Mount Gox.
Mount Gox? Yeah. Well, that's going to come to conclusion, right? Any day now, 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, not 100%, that's for sure.
Yeah.
They delayed that till next year, right? Finally?
No, they've been making payouts.
They've been making the payouts.
10 years later.
How much of the Mt. Gox claims got bought up? I know that Fortress was buying up a ton, and there were some other financial institutions as well. Was it like the majority of claims bought up?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know the answer to that either, but I know it was pretty substantial.
Yeah.
Well, they lost like 750,000 coins, so, you know.
What about you? What was the most painful Bitcoin giveaway?
The first thing that comes to mind is I bought a few Casatius coins, and I gave them away as gifts. Mm. And I didn't... Well, actually, at some point, I thought of buying...
Were they preloaded when you bought the Casatius?
I thought of buying a roll of 50, because they had, like, they sold them by the roll. And then my buddy, who was going to be in on the purchase, he was, like, hesitant. And then, yeah, the company just stopped making them. They're like, oh, we're closing shop, we're worried. But, yeah, I'm just, you know, regretful that I didn't keep one of those... I think it was 2011 era, like Casatius coins.
Because that's appreciated more than Bitcoin.
Especially the early ones are. Yeah, I think they go for maybe 1.5 or 1.6 Bitcoin. But it's also just, you know, sentimental. Like it's a physical object from that era. But at least, you know, I know, you know, the two people I gave them to, they each are taking good care of it, and they know it's precious, and
have they swept it?
I'm almost 100% sure they didn't.
It's kind of hysterical that Trump like immediately swept it. It took like a day or two. Give me the coin.
He was like, get that shit off that coin.
That was definitely the most entertaining thing he could have done.
He's like, stitch some more hats. How many hats can I buy with this for the campaign?
Well, so the original Casatius coins, those came preloaded, right? Or did you have to load them?
No,
so
they were preloaded.
That was the whole controversy about them, right? Is that you had to trust him that there were actually coins on them.
Well, no, yeah, but that was easy to verify. But the trust element was that he did not keep some kind of backlog of all the private keys and that he could swipe them later.
Sure.
That was the... Well, it wasn't... But people trusted him generally. They thought he was a straight shooter.
I think that Bobby Lee took some heat for this too, right? What was that, Ballet or something?
Ballet, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think things had evolved, and I think there was a sense that that product lagged behind the state of the art and kind of was a bit more classic.
Do you guys remember there was this physical Bitcoin company called Titan Coin?
Mm-hmm.
And it had like it was kind of like a Greek warrior that was on it.
Right, yeah.
I wonder, how many of those are in circulation? Because I do think these are objects that people are going to collect for a long time to come.
Yeah, I think they're definitely the most valuable and sought after Bitcoin collectible.
Yeah, it's like that. Master shares, I think, will be in the future. You know, you can imagine, similar to Cassatius coins, right? They contain Bitcoin.
Yeah.
In a spiritual way.
Yeah. All right, so Cassatius coins, Mount Gox.
Master shares? Is that
MSTR is, is the ticker. MSTR.
Is that the new way to pronounce it? Like
I don't
master?
Know. I just thought I've been doing it. Is that wrong?
I was confused. You did that on the last podcast. It tripped me up a little bit too.
You don't call them master?
Because I mean, we're talking about the old era. I'm thinking of master coin. Remember?
Oh, you're thinking of master coin.
Master coin. Yeah.
Well, the ticker for MicroStrategy is MSTR. So I follow Dylan LeClaire on these things, right? He calls it master. So.
All right.
I don't know. I don't know enough about financial engineering, but.
Yeah. So. We got Mt. Gox, Cassatius coins. What's your
most? We got 100K, right?
What's your most painful?
What's my most painful?
Yeah.
Oh, just being a journalist.
No, with Bitcoin.
Yeah, that was the most painful thing. Yeah.
Mine was
because
like early,
I chose not to partake. Mm.
Right? Early shitcoinery.
Yeah. In order to
never got bad.
In order to keep my objectivity, I was encouraged not to partake.
You chose not to imbibe
in the coins. Well, my calculus.
You didn't inhale.
I never walked you through my calculus, so you know I joined CoinDesk in the mid-2013, and so you know I was just out of school, and I was looking for somebody to pay me to do some journalism. I had paid for a journalism degree, so that seemed like a good idea. And the culture of journalism stuff back then, even at CoinDesk, because it was very early, was that you didn't partake in it because that was like the right thing was to stay objective about covering it. And I was like, well, geez, okay, if I invest in Bitcoin and that goes to zero. And then I become a Bitcoin journalist and it goes to zero. Well, then I get two bags that go to zero. You know, on one hand, I'm like ruining my reputation.
Right.
I'm like ruining my journalism reputation because like maybe no, because it was very taboo. Like, I mean, mainstream journalists, you know, they were on the CoinDesk website during, you know, I remember being at the New York financial hearings, looking over the Bloomberg guy's shoulder and he was on the CoinDesk website. But we were still like a lower class of journalists, right? We weren't respected. We were the fanboys, right? So we weren't treated in that way. So there was like sort of this need to sort of like, okay, well, I gotta hedge myself a little bit because if I go all in on both camps here, you know, then I just go to zero on two things, right?
Yeah.
Whereas at least if Bitcoin goes to zero and I'm a journalist who doesn't own it, I can maybe do some other journalism in the future. That was the thinking. So I hedged. I didn't go all in. That was the regret there. Because I mean, I started the first piece that I wrote about Bitcoin was like $50, you know, or something like that.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What a world.
Yeah, and I think I was looking at the Mt. Gox website. I think the first article that I read was the Mt. Gox lawsuit with. This is killing me.
Jed?
No. Who was the Peter? What was the Peter Vesinos company?
CoinLab.
Which I think is still ongoing, right? Like 10 years later.
Oh my
like
God. Yeah.
Where is Jed McCaleb these days?
Oh, Jed? He's out in San Francisco. Well, he's living great off Stellar and all that stuff. You know?
Well, he's had a couple of big wins.
Yeah, he's had some big wins.
Ripple, yeah. Bitcoin.
Right.
Stellar.
I think he owned Bitcoin.com for a while, didn't he?
Did he? I didn't know that.
I think he sold it to Roger Ver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Jed is the origin of a lot of Bitcoin stuff.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character. It'd be great to have him here for a conversation one day.
Yeah, he's he's certainly on the Stellar train. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure his feelings on current Bitcoin, but
what is Stellar doing? I don't follow really.
It's a little off the radar. I haven't heard about
great
it.
Great question.
It's like a Ripple fork, right?
Yeah, I mean, ostensibly, when they launched it, it was designed to kind of, you know, be a bank-to-bank transfer network that had a public cryptocurrency,
What's not to like about that?
It's hard to know, right? Every coin culture has their own alternative world, right? They have their own history and lineage, and, you know, maybe they're at all-time highs today. I don't know. Stellar at all-time highs.
If only everything was pegged to the Bitcoin, to the orange coin.
That was a dream at one point.
The Poloniex days.
That was a great one. So the greatest part about Stellar, so it was a fork of Ripple because Jed and
Chris Larson
got into a
But there was like a bunch fight. Of weird legal stuff where he was dumping XRP. Is this what you're going to bring up? Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, the funniest part to me was when, so Jed goes over across the street, sets up Stellar,
And then they airdrop basically equal Stellar coins to everybody who had Ripple coins to kind of bring people in. Except in their terms of service, they had one carve out. It was for any holder above some threshold. The only holder above that threshold was Chris Larson. So it was basically like, we're airdropping to everybody in Ripple except fuck you, Chris Larson. And I was just like, in the legal terms of service, I was like, that's good.
Yeah, I remember the source code didn't have
That's like grade A petty, though. Like, that's A plus petty.
They didn't do a global search. There was like, it was either like Ripples or there was a reference to Ripple in the fork, in the source code for Stellar when it launched, where it just referenced either XRP or Ripple or Ripples or something like that throughout, which is, you know, always entertaining.
Well,
but
yeah, pour one out for Jed. Well, I'm sure he's doing okay at 100K.
Sure, he's fine. I'm sure everybody's fine.
Yeah.
So Patrick, we met I think at Fidelity back in like 2015 or something like that.
Could be.
How are things? What have you been up to?
Things are good. We just been doing my thing. Started a new company called Shurus, which is great. So we started that last year. We are a digitally native trust company. So we have been approved for our trust charter in North Carolina. So we have a new trust company that's coming online in Q1, and digitally native, chartered to work in the digital asset industry and do all sorts of fun things with it. So that, yeah, I've just been like hanging out in the background and, you know, grinding away.
What kind of charter is that? Is that going to be federal, or do you still have to go state by state?
It's a state bank charter.
Okay.
And
so everywhere except for like, what is it, Texas? Which one, and New York are the persnickety ones?
New York is persnickety, but we would, so we can get reciprocity with a number of different states.
Yeah.
With New York, the only area that is sort of carved out from reciprocity is BitLicense stuff.
Yeah.
So, but other regular trust services, we have reciprocity potentially with New York.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Retail, exciting. Institutions, what's like the target?
More institutional, more foundational infrastructure kind of thing. So, so if you wanted to launch like a stablecoin or something like that, and you wanted to actually have your reserve segregated into a, you know, a trust account that's, you know, for the benefit of token holders, it's managed by an independent, regulated financial entity, you could do that. And we could also prove the reserves daily, right?
Yeah.
So that you would actually have some, like, transparency into the whole thing. If you wanted to, like, pool a bunch of Bitcoin together and stake it and create, like, a mini private fund, we could do that for you, too.
That's cool.
Like, fun stuff.
That's cool. Yeah. How about you, Tor? What you been up to?
After doing my absolute
best that. Peter McCormick podcast of all time.
yes. No, I've been great. I've been in Austin. One thing that that has happened recently, which is exciting, is we did a call for papers. I think a year and a half ago. It was called the Satoshi Papers, and the goal was to get scholars together to create a bundle of peer reviewed papers.
We had 100K?
I don't know. I've been trudging through New York City.
Jameson Love.
Joke has been that you were going to arrive as soon as we hit 100K.
Yeah, you were just waiting on the corner looking at the price ticker. Standing in the rain. I'm not coming in that place until it's six figures.
Yeah, we're looking for somebody to bring the enthusiasm here because it's 100K and, you know, there's tons of new people aping into Bitcoin right now. And it's
very hot up here.
It's hot.
You know, it's sapping a little bit of the energy. Can we open that window a little bit? I know you closed it because there was sort of like a leaf blower or something. Jameson, welcome. You got your headphones, microphone. Help yourself to a beer if you would like.
I wanted from these guys some sort of awe, you know, like sort of some sense that they had achieved something. You know, they've been waiting for 13, 14 years for Bitcoin to hit 100K.
I think this table's been around long enough where we're just dead inside.
There's no one crying.
We don't really feel feelings anymore.
There's no one crying here. You know?
I feel nothing.
I feel nothing.
Your wildest dreams that this, you know, you achieved. Wall Street can no longer laugh at you. The government's no longer laughing at you.
I want an apology from Paul Krugman.
Okay.
I think he should resign as the chief economist of the paper of record.
Talk to Trump about that. Yeah,
I think it's ridiculous. He's been hurting Americans, family offices for a decade.
You guys have been persecuted for a decade, right? I mean, this is have we broken? Are we out of the early innings of Bitcoin? Are we officially mainstream?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's over for
this
us.
This is the mass adoption phase, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's no longer
doesn't mean it's a mass understanding phase, but it's the mass adoption phase.
Yeah, well said. I agree.
Well, I mean, I think you can look at the metrics, right? And I've noticed a few people that have commented on this. We're in a bull market from a financial perspective. You look at the financial charts and it's like up and to the right. You look at the network, the nodes, the blockchain, and it's crickets. Mm-hmm. So we're not in a bull market from a sovereignty perspective phase. Mm. And it'll be interesting to see, does that even happen?
You're saying the ETFs have not caused a massive uptick in people running full nodes at home.
Exactly.
Do you think there's a world where like old Bitcoiners are just fabulously wealthy but miserable because the project actually failed to achieve that?
And look, and this has happened. So the disillusionment, I think, happens to a lot of Bitcoiners. And, you know, obviously the best example of disillusionment that we have was from the scaling wars. And so a large tranche of early adopters who had cemented in their minds that Bitcoin was a certain thing became very disillusioned when the rest of the world exclaimed otherwise. And so I think there's plenty of options for that.
The MicroStrategy stock. That's
the fancy Bitcoin. Let's get back to it. That people would say Master is the real Bitcoin.
So no, like
ape
tongue,
into Master and be like, sell all their Bitcoin.
So he gets it. He gets Master.
Yeah, it's the real Bitcoin.
I feel good, right?
This is a new virtuous cycle, right?
Well, we need something that has yield.
The
right,
super cycle.
Yeah. All right. So can you explain Bitcoin yield to me? Like, is it a real thing? Like,
general? Like, what do you mean Bitcoin yield?
So the whole thing with
it's almost like you're asking, like, can you explain making money to me? Like, seriously.
All the companies, the micro. Strategy, Semler Scientific, you have all these companies now.
Right.
They're buying Bitcoin.
Right.
But is Bitcoin, BTC yield is a thing? You believe
But I mean, the MicroStrategy yield comes from the equity holders. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
I mean, look, I'm a financial, financialization is not my, that's your bag. Right?
I mean, it seems to be that they're arbitraging between like, what is kind of a structural problem in the traditional financial world, that there's so many institutions that have to buy bonds, and bonds are basically just paper, and all of a sudden they have available a Bitcoin linked bond, and so that is just like, it's like, you know,
what's the bond,
it's like a plug in a pool, like you pull the plug and all the capital wants in. And so he happens to be first, and so that's very attractive.
Who's buying the bond? These are the people who are lending him the money?
Right? Okay. I mean, if you buy a bond, you're buying debt. And so you're buying his debt. And so
So his debt is the thing that's sexy.
Yeah, I mean, it's favorable terms, apparently, compared to the rest of the bond market, which I know nothing about.
So they're giving him money for free because it's
cool. There's just institutions that are kind of, you know, they've kind of been suckered into being
full disclosure.
It's not for free, right? It's for equity, effectively. It's not for equity, but it's backed by the value of the company.
An option to buy equity in the future. Yeah, things like that.
Option to buy equity in the company.
That's, I believe so, yeah.
Well, that's the collateral that's being posted.
And that's the thing that's so attractive. And then so if MicroStrategy can borrow at nearly 0%, well, then they can just keep buying Bitcoin. The question is more like how much incremental Bitcoin can they buy, given that we know the maximum is 19 million or whatever, or 20 million. Mm. I mean, definitely a brilliant arbitrage model, you know? Right now we're at like 3.5 times the value of MicroStrategy market
like
3 cap, 3.5x the underlying Bitcoin that they
But own. I think that's the wrong way of looking at it, and that's why people are starting to exclaim it's a Ponzi scheme. It's like, that's not the reason that people are buying into it. The people that are buying into MicroStrategy
we're looking at the Reddit, right? It's like it's gone meme stock.
Yes,
right?
But that is a result of what I think is the root cause, which is that it's basically a backdoor ETF. There's a lot of money and retail investors out there that still don't have access to Bitcoin ETFs. Maybe that's because they're at Vanguard. Maybe it's I know that there's a bunch of people in the UK that don't have access to.
They can't buy the Bitcoin ETFs?
Correct. Because I've spoken with them. And they've told me, you know, I don't care what the multiple is. I want to be on the rocket ship regardless of where I get in.
So in a way, it's the new GBTC for some people.
Yeah, exactly. The premium or the discount didn't really matter with GBTC because it was the closest thing you could get to, you know, dump your IRA into, you know, what is effectively
Bitcoin. My position on Master is that I don't get it. The vibes seem good. And I think this is just, this seems, it's going to go up. But, like, does it blow? Like, what is the end?
No, I mean, it's, I think it is going to blow up. I mean, it's going to correct at some point, right? Any of these type of, if you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, like, that didn't end.
A good trade never lasts forever, right? A really good trade like this is exposing inefficiencies in the market.
Right.
And those inefficiencies, when they're really lucrative, once somebody figures it out, that collapses. It can take a long time for it to collapse. With GBTC, it lasted for a while. That
well, what's the inefficiency? Is just every company should be buying Bitcoin and putting it on their balance?
Yeah, we'll see copycats for sure. Like, and I think that there, I don't know where it is, right? I don't know exactly what's going to be the break here, but there is something, you know, there is an inefficiency being expressed here. He has hacked something. He figured something out. Which
something
is, this
is a vague word.
Well, no, he has access to the bond markets.
Exactly.
And
borrowing money to buy more Bitcoin, buying all the all-time highs, like, you know, that's not really going to go on forever.
I mean, everyone else who is at that level that has that access to bond market liquidity, I think is way too conservative to do a strategy like this. And that's why he doesn't have competition yet.
And Saylor made a big deal recently about talking to the CEO of Microsoft. I'm blanking on the name.
But he turned down the meeting.
He did.
Microsoft CEO.
Oh, that's a shame. I mean, look, there are other companies, there are smaller companies that are doing this trade. Mm-hmm. But once you start having larger companies, if you see another large company like plow into this, then that definitely takes some of the, like, you know, premium juice out of. I'm not going to call it Master. I don't like that. That feels icky.
No, try it again.
MicroStrategy.
MicroStrategy is like too long.
You know? It's too long. It's a terrible name. Master
is like, it's got a power.
Master.
You know? It's like Master.
It's very confusing. Yeah. MasterCard. but yeah, I do think that really good trades have a shelf life. They can last for a while. Like, you don't know exactly what the shelf life is going to be, but at a certain point, other players in the market are going to do the same thing, which dilutes the value of that special thing that one company is doing. Or some other catalyst comes along that blows this thing up. I really hope that this is not a blow-up type thing. Unless there's like a custody breach or...
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people incorrectly assume that he's basically doing simple leverage and that he's going to get margin called. And that's... Mm-hmm. I mean, he's structuring the bonds. I think they're all at like 3 or 4 year.
He had one margin call, right? I think... 2 years ago, during the collapse down to like, what was it, 15, 17K? Yeah. I believe there was a margin call.
Maybe.
I could be wrong about that.
But only a small portion. He's
able to cover it.
Yeah, he's structuring these bonds to basically be at least like the length of a full Bitcoin cycle. Mm-hmm. So presumably, you know, the strategy only really works well as long as Bitcoin is going up. If it flatlines or it starts going down, then obviously he's going to slow down his purchasing. The question is, how much would it have to go down for it really be problematic? And I think it would have to be significant enough that we would all be crying regardless of what MicroStrategy was doing.
Could there have been a MicroStrategy before MicroStrategy, like earlier in Bitcoin history? Because there were companies like Overstock, right? Like,
I mean,
Overstock.
That's kind of what I did with my fund, you know? Like, when I did the fund in 2018, the strategy was, we're just going to kind of look at the cycles, and we were taking in capital, physical Bitcoin, and we were not selling it because we didn't want to incur a capital gains event for our investors. Mm. So what we just did is use it as collateral. We borrowed dollars against it and then just used our kind of analysis to see, well, you know, is the market undervalued? And then we would lever up, and then the plan was to sell a bit, you know. So it's kind of a very crude proto MicroStrategy situation, but the capital we had available, you know, we were looking at 12% interest. Like, that's just a completely different universe than if you can borrow at 1 or 2%.
Yeah.
Mm. And also, our loans were only 1 year loans, so we had to roll them over every year, which meant we had that uncertainty. We don't know if either the interest rate is going to be the same or if the amount of capital is going to be the same. And so what if the capital isn't there and then we have to liquidate, et cetera? So, yeah, I mean, he needed that kind of embeddedness in the financial system to do the MicroStrategy strategy.
MicroStrategy. See, that's why it doesn't work. MicroStrategy is great.
Master strategy. Overstock, Patrick Byrne, T0, that's a really interesting callback because you would think that, I mean, he had so much knowledge.
And they owned a lot of Bitcoin.
Wow. He had so much knowledge about, you know, public markets and the financing around it. Yeah. Like, that was sort of
I always thought of Michael Saylor as, like, a Patrick Byrne type figure.
Yeah.
You know? But now that Patrick Byrne's gone, I don't know what happened to him.
Well, like, Maverick. Did he pass away?
No.
I think he just sort of
He was very involved with, like, the Trump stuff, like, before, like, 4 years, like, in the last administration stuff.
Is it with or against?
So I'm gonna like, he got very involved in like some conspiracy.
Russian spy stuff that he was intriguing, or he was dating a Russian agent, or he was accusing someone. This is Byrne from Overstock. This isn't McAfee.
Yeah, like no, like he had his own like. I haven't followed like the end of this trail, but he had his own sort of like.
It's one of those gnomon is omen things. Like he burned out somehow, burned himself out.
Well, he beat cancer, and then he came back. And
yeah, you start getting nervous about telling a story, and I'm going to get nervous. I don't know what's going on.
Because I don't know enough about it. It's one of those things, like, I've seen it out of the corner of my eye. You know, I need a refresher. Yeah, it's like I need to actually look at the source material. But my recollection is that he was very involved in, like, the intrigue of the first Trump administration somehow, where, like, there was some accusations of some espionage thing that he was like involved with or not involved with, and then he just went off the reservation from there.
I see.
I hope he's doing well and
he
still has a bunch of Bitcoin. That'd be nice.
Yeah,
sure. I'm sure on some level he does.
It's a nice thing to wish for everybody. How many of the people that you guys saw in like 20, if you think back to 2012, 2013, like what are the like, just talk aggregately about like the people from that. Are they still involved? Like what is their interest level in Bitcoin these days? Like,
from like, it's funny because the ones you remember best are obviously the ones who stuck around.
Yeah, but like the people, like if you went to a meetup in 2013 or something like that, you would have probably seen different people. Like those people aren't really.
Yeah, Mike Hearn doesn't come around that much anymore.
He definitely blazed a trail out.
I'd say Gavin's pretty quiet.
Right.
Yeah. Mike got a hernia.
What are they doing now?
Not a lot stayed in the public eye. I think maybe they start families or they continue to build businesses. I think a lot of them are active still, you know, and they're still Bitcoiners. They're just, you know, choosing to be more, you know, wisely, probably so, more private.
Where's Thamos?
I heard from him a couple of years ago.
Wisconsin, I bet, right? He's still a Bitcoiner, you know, like, yeah.
I think he's originally from Wisconsin.
He is, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just love Thamos. The idea that under, you know, there's this giant iceberg under the water of Bitcoiners that are very wealthy and very wise and that kind of run their own node and
you think they're wise? You think wise?
Yeah, of course. Of course, yeah. Okay. You know, I think it's a trade-off, you know, to be a public figure in Bitcoin. It means that you're more potentially a target and things like that. So it depends on what you want to achieve in your life, you know. Mm. So I think it, depending on what you want to achieve, it can be very wise to be to be less in the public eye. Doesn't mean that you can't contribute.
I'm sort of interested.
Like Famous, nobody even knows his name. Like there's a lot of NIMs. There's NIMs that I talk to that I've talked to for years. I have no idea where they live. I have no idea what their name is. and they keep it that way, and I'm okay with that.
I think there were plenty, not like tons, but I think there were plenty of like dentists and doctors and people like that who in 2012, 2011 were just like, yeah, I'll put like $5,000 or $10,000 into this thing. Yeah. Probably never have to work again, right? Yeah. And it's just like, you know, never because had to force sell because they had
new,
a real job.
The new people like will say, "Oh, there's no way you would have hodled, right?" Like they kind of look at the old guard and they say, "Like, oh, they definitely sold."
You know? Well, no. The hardest part of hodling is when you have to pay your mortgage, mm-hmm. right, yeah. or pay for daycare or things like that. That's what makes hodling. That's the most difficult part of hodling for most people.
Yeah.
If you're like a dentist and you've got all those expenses covered,
it's just gravy.
It's gravy, and it's a lot easier.
So doctors and dentists made out good. That's
I would say that's fair because I love
the dentist thing. There are like a bunch of dentists that keep like coming up as
it's funny. My dad's a dentist.
Really, that's funny.
So the best thing to be in early Bitcoin was a dentist.
Yeah.
Like the highest returns.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're getting alpha out of the patients.
I mean, why do you think Dentacoin was so big? Yeah, that's right.
That was their exit.
Set that one up.
Right. Oh, I forgot about that one. Yeah. But I do run into people at conferences who, because I had this newsletter, right? So it would go out to like small time investors and like a lot of we grew to 1,500 paying subscribers, and we weren't cheap. Like, we charged 400 euros a year or 600 for 2 years. So in a way, I think because
what
of
years,
that, people
what
took
years
it
did
serious.
You do this?
2011 through 2013, yeah. Yeah. So, and we started from scratch. So I think the first month we did a big blast because my publisher had a big email list. So we got 400 on day one, and then it grew to 1,500. Yeah, it was really successful. Yeah. It's the first time I actually earned any kind of substantial.
So you minted a lot of Bitcoiners with that.
But they could have bought Bitcoin rather than buying your newsletter, right?
Well, they learned about Bitcoin through the newsletter because in the Dutch language, there really wasn't anything.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So, Antonopoulos, kind of off the radar these days. Is anybody in touch with Andreas? I actually put out a tweet. We would love to have him here. I know he doesn't do that much these days.
I've never talked to Andreas.
Yeah, I mean,
great.
He,
I haven't talked to him in a while, but I do really like
him.
He
pings me from time to time. I've gone on his show when there have been like major security incidents.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like once a year. He might reach out to me.
Ask him if it would be okay if I reach out to him or something like that. We'll talk about that afterwards.
HRF, the Human Rights Foundation, they're doing this Finney Prize. You guys know about
this?
It's a rewarding like one Bitcoin to a Bitcoiner from each epoch. There's like the MVP of the epoch. So like Hal Finney got the first one. Obviously, that was a no-brainer. But the 2012 to 2016 epoch, I think it's like you got a lot of – that's a tough one because I think a lot of the people from that era who are like sort of big names, it's like they haven't – maybe necessarily like kind of aged well, right? Like
their I think Antonopoulos is definitely in the mix for that.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
for 2012 to 2016, who's on your list?
Is 2012 to 2016 considered one single epoch?
So the epochs
because
are all the mining cycles.
That feels like
at
least two to me.
No, yeah. It's by mining cycle.
Oh, by mining cycle, I see.
Yeah, I would do Antonopoulos in there.
Like if you look
what
at
about
like
the Bitcoin Uncensored guys?
John Seth.
John Seth and DeRose. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
I feel like they're a little more in like the 16, 17 era, but maybe I'm misremembering.
Maybe that's true. Yeah, that's true.
If
that's going to keep happening,
mix,
I'm flattered. The one Bitcoin prize, I mean, that's going to exceed a Nobel Prize, you know?
Right. That's kind of what they're
It's
going to
be amazing. Yeah. And so those Bitcoin already locked in?
I think the obvious one is Ross. I think that Ross wins this one.
Yeah.
Even against Andreas.
I didn't think of that.
I think you got Ross, Andreas, Roger, Gavin, Amir. Gavin, Amir, Roger, I think. You know.
Well, Amir was probably more influential for the first epoch than the second, no?
No, I think like...
the Bitcoin was 2009, 2010.
Yeah, but Darkwell was until like 2014 and that whole stuff. You know, that was his golden era with Cody Wilson running around with a 3D printed gun.
Who else? Out of that list, I would say Ross and Andreas are definitely years beyond
the
other two.
Is it like
two.
Most influential or what is the...
I don't know.
Would you put Brad and Fred in that category?
Best Bitcoin person, you know?
But like best.
Brian.
Man of the year. Oh, like most impactful or something.
Well, I'm not affiliated with the prize. Aaron Van Wertem, who I work with at Bitcoin Magazine, is on the board. We were talking about this morning. We were bringing it up, and he was asking me for some recommendations.
I guess you would probably want to pick someone who kind of represents, in a way, the cypherpunk ethos or something like that.
That's what I mean, like a man of the year kind of thing.
Well, Time Magazine, like, put Hitler on the cover.
Right? Hey, well, if you want to make that argument, yeah. I think Roger's a shoe. It might be a shoe-in, then, I guess, if you...
I mean, does it have to be public-facing, or can it just be impact?
Yeah,
because
that's
what about,
like
Peter Veal, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably the most lines of code committed,
right,
and, like, definitely embodies cypherpunk in the sense that it's, like, you know, he spoke through code.
Maxwell,
he set a lot of cultural norms.
Absolutely,
around.
Alex and Suhas,
but yeah, totally
but
behind
the
scenes.
That,
but they did a lot.
The thing though is that like that's what I mean about like kind of bridging cultures. It has to kind of maybe speak to newer people a little bit because like Maxwell, sadly, has been sort of like you know kind of forgotten by the new generation of people.
I think he's still battling on our BTC at times.
Is he really? He's on the BSV subreddit.
Yeah, he goes on every once in a while. He'll pick up he'll show up on a Reddit again. Yeah. A subreddit.
I think he was just really badly burned by the block size wars, and so he just doesn't want
public. And the Craig Wright. Craig Wright.
He doesn't want to be in the public eye. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, the Craig Wright stuff is nasty too.
Mm. There's a lot to choose from. I mean, Szabo, Adam Back, like there's some pretty big names. It'll be interesting. I think out of that list, come on in. Out of that list, Ross for that epoch, Ross and Andreas still stick out. Andreas did so much making it accessible for people who knew nothing about the code, but the tech. Didn't know about Silk Road or the usage that was, you know, a big accelerator at the time. He was speaking to a massive audience in a way that was distilling some of the really big concepts very quickly.
I mean, he was like the first one to go in front of national governments. I think he was the first one on Joe Rogan, right?
Yeah.
He's the only real Bitcoiner on Rogan to this day. Like Rogan hasn't really had a hardcore Bitcoiner on there. Like, he'll have, like, Elon or other people that are into Bitcoin.
The Hawk Tuh girl did reach out to try to get Bitcoin Magazine to introduce her to Michael Saylor. And we did broker the ask. So there has been an...
There's been communication.
Could go on Hawk
Saylor wisely declined.
I think that's sad, really. I do.
Think he should?
I think he should go on Hawk Tuh.
Okay. You know,
it's talk to her.
Talk
to her.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you've got to go to the people, where the people are. And the people are on Talk To. You know, she's made it. Say what you will about that. She's toughed it out. You know,
I think Andreas is. I could get behind that.
You think
him
over Ross? Like you think Ross over?
I mean, he mastering Bitcoin, just writing that book alone, like that.
But just the sheer number of people who are onboarded through impact. Silk Road. Right? You
know? I think Andreas onboarded more long-term Bitcoiners than Silk Road.
No,
Silk Road onboarded a lot of people who are regretful Bitcoiners.
I think so.
What about Michael Goldstein from that era? You know, like the Nakamoto Institute, like in terms of helping people remember the important documents and featuring all these like epic articles. Yeah. Like he curated everything. Mm-hmm. You know, like he didn't do huge amounts of kind of, you know, public talking and stuff.
Silk Road did an amazing job showing the power of the usage, right? But I think Andreas really dove into the power of the asset, the technology, the usage.
That has panned out?
The game theory.
Like Goldstein, I will agree, like his...
Well, I would argue that what Andreas was talking about has panned out better than... Well, it did pan out a lot better than the Silk Road,
unless we
right?
forget Mircea Popescu, also from that era.
don't get me started on Popescu.
He definitely won't win the
You could also throw Budeon in the mix. We've talked about the Bitcoin philosophers before. Yeah, Budeon and Papashu were pretty.
All of these people were prescient thinkers, but I don't think they reached mass audiences. They're only known by us, like really niche, deep Bitcoiners.
Yeah, but that's the era, right? And I would say the same for Hal Finney, right? Outside of Bitcoiners, are people going to know whose legs those are?
Well, he's a pretty beefy Wikipedia articles. I don't know. It's I think part of this is probably also educational. It's like a way to highlight someone.
I think it's going to be hard to beat Ross after he comes out of prison. I think it would be he's going to have such a groundswell.
I mean, he'll be the most.
Just think about that moment when he comes out. It's going to be like the Assange was. I mean, it's going
to
be like
I'm going to be a fucking mess if he comes to PubKey. It's going to be wild. No cameras.
I think it'll be like Mandela coming out of prison or something. Like, right. Like in terms of impact, it'll be amazing.
We were talking about that at the Bitcoin Magazine the other day, where it's like we got to have it's got to be the cover. I mean, obviously, if he gets released, you know, it's like
people are already talking about flying out there and whether his family would agree to that or
let's let the family have a moment. I don't think that we need
and
to
given,
swarm
given that
Bitcoiners
Ross, given that
into
Ross
this.
Is funding the entire Bitcoin Strategic Reserve from the U.S. government. I mean, I think
Ross and Bitfinex.
Yeah, a lot of customers.
How funny is that though? Like you're the national government's like Fort Knox of Bitcoin just as your old wallet. Like it's just like you add that. Like it must suck, but also it must be like kind of like it's kind of funny. Like, you know, like what are the odds of that outcome?
You know, Razzle Khan was a valued patron of PubKey for a while. Yeah. She's going to take a little bit
but
of a
she's
break.
She's taking a hiatus, I saw that. Yeah.
But she has posted some of her stickers in the bathrooms downstairs.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right, so excuse me. We got a couple of minutes left. I want to make sure you guys get a proper break before we get things started downstairs. Do we talk about Gensler? Do we care?
What is he? Is he dead?
He's gone.
He announced the resignation.
Yeah. Oh no way! He did.
Where have you been?
Oh my God!
His last day. This just happened like a couple hours ago. His last day is January 20th, which is the day before inauguration.
No way!
Yeah.
He resigned.
Yeah.
Man, what a moment!
Yeah.
This is somehow it feels historic. Wow.
Wow. I mean, so this really gets you.
But it's still like the end of an era.
So Gary stepping down really gets you, but 100K Bitcoin, you don't have any.
No. it's just fiat. I care about gold parity, you know, like, give me 850.
But Gary is like, he gets you in the fields.
So. Yeah, no, I choose gold over Gary, for sure. Oh, no, anyway. It's because we were just so focused on this person for so long.
Yeah.
And also, to me, I think he's symbolic in a way of like, The Democrats being in power. Like, I do feel like he was kind of like the main.
But he was like, when he came in, everybody was like, oh, he's the Bitcoin champion.
Yeah.
Then they took down some of his classes off of MIT because he was a hypocrite.
Don't you think that Gary was planted there to delay Bitcoin adoption so that institutions could buy?
Well, yes. I don't know. What I heard is that the likely...
You don't think he just did his job? Like, you don't think he's getting paid off on the back end?
I don't think he's getting paid off.
He believes...
They get paid off by their next job.
Gary already has made his money.
I'm sure.
He was not coming into this. Yeah. Like, a lot of people come into public service, and it is, like, a way to, like, enhance your reputation, parlay into board seats,
BlackRock planted him there, and they said, Gary, you have one job. You got to suppress the price so that we can
Gary worked at Goldman, not BlackRock, to be clear. And secondly, he made plenty of money. He came in, he was a zealot, right? Because he didn't care about his next job or his next thing. He cared about what he cared about. Mm. And I should earn a Bitcoin because he came to my class at Harvard Law School, my reading group, and I taught him everything he knows. So you're welcome, everyone. Welcome. Gary's my guy.
It could have been a lot worse.
You know, it's funny because like I knew he was going to be
he was hanging around MIT.
Nothing surprised me about what his regime ended up looking like. He was very transparent about what he wanted to do. It's just people in crypto got so excited because he taught a class. And they didn't actually bother to ask the people who were around him at the time what that really meant.
So my theory, you don't buy this at all, that he was there to suppress the price.
I don't think he was there to suppress the price. I think he would have been more in favor of the ETF and not sort of done it begrudgingly the way he did had FTX not blown up in his lap and like some other things. I think he was very much interested in bringing Wall Street into Bitcoin and to take over all of the sort of intermediary roles, intermediate the space, and then regulate it through those intermediaries.
But I mean, FTX was an offshore entity. Like, why would anyone even feel responsible for that?
I can't explain why people took meetings with SBF. I certainly didn't. So I don't know. I can't explain that era.
Did you ever meet any of the FTX people? Did anyone?
I met Sam.
I met a bunch of them. Yeah.
He's the worst smelling person I've ever met. Oh my God.
I knew their lawyer really well.
Really? So,
yeah, of course.
It was such a good
And I knew that was a problem because that was an obvious red flag from the beginning.
It was such a good like Silicon Valley VC hack. It's just like, this kid's amazing. He played League of Legends the entire meeting. Like, this is awesome.
That's Sequoia memo.
Fucking dopes.
That Sequoia memo was amazing.
I people like being disrespected.
We need to make sure that doesn't get screwed.
Important people get off on being disrespected.
Once again, the comedy series Silicon Valley turns out to have been a documentary.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I always say about FTX, if you had asked me, even as someone who was highly skeptical of their business, just from a Bitcoin perspective, it's just like, what was the worst case scenario? Like, if I were to draw up the worst case scenario for what I thought FTX was, it would have been like 10x better than how awful it really was. It was they were really farming yam coins and then YOLOing that into fucking whatever they were doing and then raising $100 million off of it. It really was. It was 10 times worse than anything you could have dreamed up of, even in the worst case scenario.
But Patrick, I agree with you. I do think that they're worried about their next job. Maybe Gary Gensler is going to go work with Ben Losky at NYDIG. But, there's always like a next
Gensler's
phase.
Gensler's second act is he's got a meme coin. He goes on pump.fun. As soon as he gets off, this is how he redeems himself.
Yeah.
The last day, he gets on pump.fun. He launches a coin.
tweets it from the SEC account.
He sits there and he dances, and he just dances, and he just goes, he pumps it up.
You
and
idiots didn't change the password.
Yeah. I mean, he does still the, what in. Is it, no hands, no rug, can't rug. Do you remember that guy? What was it, yeah. No hands, can't rug?
Yeah.
He can call it G-Coin.
All right, so we touched 99 briefly. Is it today the day? Is tonight the night?
No.
We got some champagne on ice.
Depends on when sailors' money hits the bank account.
Right? He's not the only one. Remember back in the day when Barry would be like, okay, we're going to bed. It's your turn, China. And then China would pump it for a little bit. Well, and then he'd wake up and he's like...
Barry's got a new job. He's
back in the seat.
He's really? CEO now. The AI, Bitcoin, he went to Bitcoin AI, crypto AI company.
What is this?
You didn't hear about this?
No.
He's the CEO
BitTensor or something, something.
Yeah, he's the CEO of... He went and he pivoted to AI, yeah.
Okay. Good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, everybody, for listening in. Come see us. We will get started around 6:30 with Bitcoin Trivia. Very thankful to our guests, Tor, Rizzo, Jameson, Patrick, for joining us. Welcome, everybody. Please sign the wall before you leave, before we head downstairs, and we'll see everybody at the bar. Tip your bartenders.